This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Tomorrow on the program, slot machines. Are they good for a state's budget or bad for its economy? Join us tomorrow for that discussion. Joining us as the 9/11 Commission prepares to issue its report later this week, one of the people who testified before it has found himself in legal hot water. Sandy Berger, who was President Clinton's national security advisor, has confirmed that he is under investigation for removing classified documents and notes from the National Archives. Berger was there to research security memos from his time at the White House to prepare his testimony before the 9/11 Commission. Berger's task did not take him to the National Archives known to Washington's summertime tourists, that cool block of colonnaded granite on Pennsylvania Avenue that displays documents like the Declaration of Independence and the Emancipation Proclamation. Instead, Berger's problem started in College Park, Maryland, home to the nation's and possibly the world's longest paper trail, the recorded workings of the U.S. government. Joining us now from his office in Washington is Tom Blanton, the executive director of the National Security Archive, a non-governmental collection of declassified materials. Good of you to join us today.
Pleasure to be here.
You're a scholar, and I imagine your work often takes you to the National Archives up there in College Park. Give us the tour.
It's a beautiful building out in a green swale of about 30-something acres donated by the University of Maryland and built, I think, courtesy of two powerful United States senators, Barbara Mikulski and Paul Sarbanes. It's a gorgeous building. It was opened in 1994. Walls of glass rise up about 5-6 stories. You see out to these green trees that surround the place. It's a lovely place to work, big reading rooms, about 520 miles of shelves they brag about inside, but they house everything from the famous Nixon tapes from the Oval Office to the records of the State Department embassies all around the world to genealogical records on microfilm of the various censuses to the ball gowns of the first ladies and photographs dating back to the Civil War. So it's an extraordinary array. It's, in many respects, you might call it the nation's attic.
I think the Smithsonian has a claim on that particular title. But there is, however, inside, that you've described the facility that scholars like yourself go in and use.
Right.
But isn't there also a sanctum sanctorum inside for top secret documents?
There are a number of sanctum sanctorums. Some of the places where they store, for example, old color photographs or even originals of Nixon tapes, that kind of thing, are only a handful of archivists ever see the inside of those spaces. If you're a user or a scholar like my staff, you will go into the reading room. If you're a former official like Sandy Berger, you are ushered into the secure vaults. There's an acronym for them, Sensitive Classified Information Facility, a SCIF, S-C-I-F. And I think the head of the 9/11 Commission used to joke that where he grew up, a SCIF was a small boat you used to row. But not in Washington. It's a status symbol. You have to have a SCIF to be a player. So the rules, though, of the SCIF, you go in there, and you're not allowed to take your notes out without a cleared staff person reviewing them for declassification. You're certainly not allowed to take documents out. So my assumption is behind the code-locked door, you sit at tables like a researcher does. The documents come in these archival boxes. You look through them, but you're not supposed to have briefcases or backpacks in there, and you're certainly not supposed to take a cold drink in there. It would spill on the archival records.
Well, one presumes that an official like Sandy Berger had top secret every possible clearance you could ever have, but presumably that has an end date. He's only, I assume, allowed to see the documents that refer to his time at the White House.
Right. There are two procedures he was looking at documents that governed his look at these documents. One was former presidential appointees get to see their own materials, what they saw, what they received, what they wrote. That's kind of a courtesy. It's been in most of the executive orders that govern national security secrecy. And he could look at his own materials and office files. And as the national security advisor, as you say, he would have seen the nation's top secrets. There was another reason he was in there, though, a public policy reason, which was the 9/11 Commission had asked us questions of Bush administration and of the Clinton administration about what had they done vis-a-vis al-Qaeda and bin Laden. And so he was there to look at his own office files, if you will, and these secret documents, not just to write a memoir the way most former officials, that's the reason they're there.
Ah,
but to actually
go in and remember what for their books.
Absolutely right. That's the standard. And every memoir you see from a former official will mostly mention they went back and had the opportunity to look at their own files and they had to have their notes cleared by the, say, the National Security Council staff or appropriate declassification officers. In Sandy Berger's case, he was doing it to reconstruct policy and what they had done and what they had not done about bin Laden.
So when you go in there, are you allowed to bring in your own pad, your own pencils, a tape recorder if you want?
They give you pads. They give you pencils. There are self-service copiers in there. You have these lockers, rows of lockers. You're supposed to leave your briefcases or anything else. And then when you leave these reading rooms, they actually look at your stack of notepaper. And while I suppose it's not that uncommon for a document or two or a page or two to be mixed in, say, with your notepaper, they should have caught it at the time. And he certainly should have known better that anything he wrote down from these documents would have been classified. It raises the larger question, though, which is the core documents that he apparently took out were these after-action reports about the one big success we ever had in the war on terrorism, which was beating the Millennium Plot, the people who were going to blow up the Los Angeles airport or the Space Needle. We caught them before they did it, prevented thousands of deaths. And one of the questions that jumps out at me from these news stories today is, why is this document still secret? Wouldn't we be safer if this document wasn't classified so we could learn from those successes and maybe apply them today?
Well, Sandy Berger said it was simple sloppiness. Obviously, we're going to have to wait and see what actually happened and where this investigation goes. But I think you've buried the lead. The real scandal is a self-service copier. He doesn't have to pay a quarter a page.
No, you pay. They just keep track.
Well, good. I'm glad the taxpayer is not being deprived of that small amount
Digital
of income.
Revenue, Neil.
Tom Blanton, thanks very much for being with us today.
Pleasure to be here, Neil.
Tom Blanton is Executive Director of the National Security Archives, a non-governmental collection of declassified documents, the National Security Archive, and he joined us from his office in Washington, D.C.